episode is brought to you by Vintage Media Grading at vmgvinyl.com. Explore how professional grading can protect your records at vmgvinyl.com.
And now, on with the show.
Ah, well, hey, everyone, it's Nate. Welcome to episode 404 of The Vinyl Guide, the podcast for record collectors and music nerds. And today, nerd out we shall. And it is appropriate that today is episode 404, a number which has been known to be associated with File Not Found, which is exactly what we're diving into today, a lost Steely Dan song missing for nearly 50 years. This song, called The Second Arrangement, was recorded in 1978, 1979. It was nearing completion when the multi-track tape was accidentally erased. Now, the song lived on in music legend. It's a fantastic track that would have been the centerpiece of the Gaucho album. And for years, crappy lo-fi versions were in circulation. And even some Steely Dan fans tried to recreate the song themselves. However, recently, a late stage mix was rediscovered in the possession of the family of Roger Nichols, trusted confidant and engineer contributor throughout the majority of Steely Dan's career. So today we speak to Roger's daughter, Simsie Nichols, who has been running point on this rediscovery and keeping the Steely Dan fans and music community in general apprised of what's happening with the recording. And to everyone's elation, she recently made the recording of the song available for all to enjoy freely on YouTube, which, if you haven't heard it, I highly recommend you do, and the link to that song is in this episode page. Now, for those unfamiliar with Roger Nichols, he was an incredible man, a nuclear physicist turned studio owner, designer, and engineer. I mean, the man was a genius at capturing audio. It garnered him 8 Grammys and 11 nominations. But aside from music and nuclear physics, Roger was an avid learner. He held a pilot's license. He was a scuba instructor, an inventor. He even created a digital audio workstation just for drum samples, and even wrote the operating system himself in assembly language. That's an incredible feat just on its own. Now, there seemed to be nothing that Roger couldn't do, so today we talk to his daughter Simsie all about her dad, his history, the story, the legend, and rediscovery of the Second Arrangement song, Roger's involvement with vinyl, his high school years with Frank Zappa, removing mustard from master tapes, the lengths that Roger went through to ensure Steely Dan records sounded their very best, and lots more. Plus, want you to know we have an extended version of this interview available only to show patrons at patreon.com/vinylguide, an extra 20 minutes or so diving deeper into the career of Roger Nichols, discussing Wendell, the digital audio workstation he invented, and a whole lot more. So please, if you enjoy this podcast, consider supporting our show at patreon.com/vinylguide for a few bucks a month, and you get access to extended interviews, commercial-free episodes, high-resolution audio files, and much more. That's patreon.com/vinylguide, and thank you in advance for your support. All right, with that, let's talk to Simsie Nichols all about the second chance for Steely Dan's The Second Arrangement. This week on The Vinyl Guide, we are very honored to have Simsie Nichols, who is the daughter of Roger Nichols, and we are going to be covering quite a few topics here, especially around the background of her father, some of his achievements, but most notably a deep dive into the recent find of the Steely Dan track, The Second Arrangement, which I believe, Simsie, you are the chief archaeologist of the Roger Nichols tapes. Is that right?
Yes. Thank you so much for having me. I'm so happy to be here. And yeah, I was meddling. I was digging around probably where I shouldn't have been. And look, yeah, I'm finding all sorts of fun stuff.
Did you expect to find anything? Did you know that there was stuff to be found in there? Or was it a complete happy accident that you ran across that tape?
Both. Like, I knew the tape existed, and I knew when my dad died that he had lots of treasures because he kept everything. And, you know, it took us a while to go through his stuff because he didn't leave instructions. So I sat there for probably about 6 months. Thankfully, I had some time to be able to really sort through his stuff. So I'm a huge fan of history and memorabilia. And I've always just loved kind of like that moment in the recording industry where my dad was and those guys were just like inventing stuff in the studio. And I really feel like it was this golden era of time. So I was kind of a fan that way, just loving like the history of it and the important things they were doing. And so I did know that there was probably gems in the archives, but I didn't really know exactly what. Mm-hmm. So, you know, for me, since my dad died in 2011, and I feel like he still had some stuff that he wanted to do, part of my grief process was to help him complete the things that he didn't get to finish. Look, my dad had a really big life. He's probably lived more than some of us will ever even dream of, right? Like, the guy was an expert at everything. Like, he wasn't just a hobbyist. Like, he was an expert at scuba diving. He was an expert at, like, he wasn't just a scuba diver. Like, he was an instructor. He had to go and be extra at everything, right? So... Mm-hmm. So, yeah, you know, I get that my dad's story ended and that was probably fine for him. But part of my grieving and my process was to help him finish things that I feel like he didn't get to finish. So when I was sorting through my dad's stuff, I was seeing a book that needed to be done. I was seeing a documentary that needed to be done. I was seeing memorabilia that the fans would love. I was seeing all this stuff and I really wanted to preserve it. Now, fast forward to the tape. I mean, I had known that it was a deleted song. So that sounded important. I had known that my mom kept it in her desk drawer for 40 years.
Oh, so your mom knew the tape existed as well. So yeah. You guys knew, you were very familiar with what happened, the story of the second arrangement.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. We were familiar. So we knew the story. We knew the song had been deleted, but I don't think we understood the excitement around it and like the deep dives people had been taking to find it and the remixes and we weren't aware of all the fandom happening around it.
So let me just, again, set some context because some people may not be clear on this. And this is how I understand the story is, and let me know if you know different or if there's more to add. But when Steely Dan were recording the Gaucho album, they had a song called The Second Arrangement that was pretty much completely done, or just, you know, probably 90% plus done, which is an incredible feat for Steely Dan because the way they worked was so meticulous. They took their time on things. It was a lot of effort. Perhaps the better part of a year went into recording a song like The Second Arrangement. And during the final processes, as I understand, a junior tape op who worked in the studio accidentally erased about 3/4 of the song from the original multi-track tape.
Up to the fade.
So and that's kind of all I know about that story. And for years, Steely Dan fans have, this song, The Second Arrangement, has existed in lore. There were noisy and seriously incomplete demos, lo-fi circulating. Fans had tried to recreate it. The band actually gave up on it. They said, we spent too much time on it. We're not going to do it. Maybe they did. They try to kind of
Okay. Yes. And this is also why the story is so interesting, is because not only did they can it, they canned it after they remade it again. So what happened is it got erased. It was thought to be the single. It was so catchy and they loved it. It was the first song they did and it was almost completed and it got erased. They went back in to re-record it. And at the end, Donald said, nah, scrap it. So they did it again.
There is a redone copy, but it wasn't to their tastes.
Right. It was different musicians. I heard Gary Katz talking about it once, like they just couldn't get the original feel back because since they were working with lots of session musicians, they had a whole different band doing it and they couldn't catch the original magic that happened with the first one. And I think they just didn't have the heart to, I mean, there might've been some PTSD. Maybe they just couldn't do it with the new one. since they were so meticulous and I don't know. That's wild. I don't think, like, I don't speak for all of the bands in the world, but I'm pretty sure no other band in the world would completely redo a song and then still can it.
So that's interesting because somewhere out there is a tape of a redone version of The Second Arrangement by Steely Dan, but that's not seen the light of day. Is that right?
I think it's out there. Look, I haven't done, this is also partly why I was really excited to finally share the tape with everyone, is because I wanted everyone else to tell me what I had, because I wasn't 100% either. Like, I got confirmation from the engineer Elliot and Gary that was the deleted one, because I know that there was a remake that existed. Mm-hmm. And according to my mom, my dad came home with this work tape, like they did a lot of nights, and just threw it on the desk or whatever, you know, because you're supposed to bring work tapes home to listen to what you needed to work on the next day. Like, that was in theory. Mm-hmm. So my dad, you know, took this mix out of the board or whatever and put it on this cassette tape and threw it in the drawer. And then my mom kept it safe for 40 years or 30 years, actually, when by the time my dad died, it had been 30 years. So I needed confirmation that was the deleted one and not the redone one, because I didn't know the difference. And it was so overwhelming what was online. I couldn't figure it out. I was like, I don't know what's happening. I met somebody, they made a RoboDon. They made a RoboDonald to help recreate The Second Arrangement.
AI that, Donald?
Yes. Yes. That is dedication. I love it.
Well, that's the sort of fandom that Steely Dan has. Very smart people, very creative, will go to extreme lengths. Yeah.
So, you know, partly I was grateful that I got, you know, so much response to that tape, because when I posted online in 2020 about the tape and the stuff, I actually didn't know that I had such a gem. I knew it was a cool thing and I had it in my safe, but I had a moment where I was just like sick of carrying around my dad's stuff. I didn't know what to do with it. I've already moved a lot. We went from 3 storages to 2 to 1 to my garage. It's like, mm-hmm. It's just been a decade of managing dad's stuff. And I had a moment as his kid, like, I'm sick of holding this stuff. What do I do with it? Help me. And so I just started posting on his Facebook like page, like, look, I got this cool thing, I got that cool thing. Oh, look, here's this cool thing. And people went, wait. What? Wait. Stop.
And this was the cassette that just said second RRARR. So someone had written it really quick in the studio. Second RR.
Yeah. Right. And, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And then when I posted that, they went, whoa. And I was like, what? And they're like, do you know what you have? I was like, no. What do I have? And they were like, I have to transfer right away. And then I was like, oh my God, I have to transfer right away. And then I was like, we're in a pandemic. Oh my God. And I was in Los Angeles. I mean, I think Australia too, you guys were like, we were in our house for a year. I was in my house for a whole year.
Yeah, parts of us same, very similar here too. Yeah.
So I was like, okay, y'all, I didn't mean to let the cat out of the bag, but I did. But and we're also still in a pandemic. Like, I'm sorry, you have to give me some time. And thankfully, they never let me forget about it. So I knew eventually I had to do right by everyone and transfer it and see what was on it. So, you know, it took me a while, but better late than never. I finally figured out a way to share it appropriately.
So let me ask. So when your dad was still alive, did he know the legend of The Second Arrangement? I mean, did he know the sort of groundswell that of interest it had in that song?
I don't think it was as big of a deal. Mm-hmm. Now, my dad's been gone for 12 years. So I'm not sure. I think people started learning about it in the 2000s, because I did find an old forum post. You know, during the pandemic, I did do a lot of archiving for my dad since I had some time. And I found an old like Y2K music forum that he had posted on a lot. And I went through all of the forum and I got out his responses to everybody. And I made like this Word doc and I found one where he was talking about it. And so in 2003, people were talking like, oh, is this an urban legend? We heard about a song that got deleted and didn't make it. So in 2003, they were starting to ask about it. But I don't know if it was big of a deal back then as it was today.
Let's quickly go back to the day of the deletion. Have you heard of any stories or recollections from your dad of that day that the tapes were deleted?
So my mom was there.
And in a studio.
My mom was at home. So my mom was around when that happened. So she said dad came home ashen, like someone had died. And she was like, what's wrong? What happened? And he was like, they deleted Second Arrangement. So my dad, like, it was a big deal that that song got deleted. It was like a big deal. And when I was talking to Elliot Shiner, the other engineer who works a lot with my dad on Steely Dan Records, I talked to him about it. And he said that, you know, so my dad was the first one at the studio. So I think he was the one who first got the news and then had to tell Gary, and Gary had to tell Donald and Walter. And what Elliot said, so according to him, that Gary went to Donald and Walter and said, all right, I got some good news and I got some bad news. And they were like, what's the good news? The good news is you could get to go home for the day. And they were like, what's the bad news? Bad news is we lost Second Arrangement. And like, they just turned around and walked out.
Oh, man.
So it was a big deal. I mean, as you said earlier, the amount of time, energy, and money they would spend on one song is astronomical. I saw in one interview where my dad said in 1980s money, they spent like $1.2 million on Gaucho. So that was an epic album. So, I mean, for them to have lost all that.
What sounds like a main centerpiece of the album. So interesting, when you found that tape, did you hear from Donald? Did you hear from Gary? Like, how did you work with the Steely Dan team to this recording they thought was lost? There's a version of it.
I have not spoken to Donald since my dad died. Mm-hmm. I tried to email him and they bounced back. I have a few phone numbers that have been disconnected. I asked people around him to reach out and I was hitting a lot of brick walls. So I did talk to Gary, and look, there were already versions of it online. I did not share something that wasn't already existing in the world. What I did was share something that sounded better than what everybody had already listened to. And I had a definitive answer that this was what the deleted song was. There was no more guesswork. This came from the engineer. This came from about the night before the deletion. And I think that's what was exciting to people, is that it was from literally the horse's mouth, the engineer, from the board, from the daughter. Like, they saw where it came from. It wasn't just some mysterious thing that got posted.
The provenance. It had proper provenance. You mentioned it was the night before the deletion. Is that true?
That's what my mom and dad told me. That was the story that I heard, that the night before my dad came home with this work tape.
And once the deletion happened and he had that work tape, he kept it locked in the drawer. So he must have known that that was potentially the last gasp of that song.
Well, my mom kept it safe. Mm. My dad hated, I hate to use the word hate. Is that a double negative? I hate to use the word hate.
You know, a double negative does not connotate a positive, but a doubly strong desire to negate, I believe. Yes.
He hated cassette tapes.
Yeah,
I mean, my dad would have thrown it away. There's nothing you could do with it. I mean, a Steely Dan song would, I mean, this would never have seen the light of day. There's nothing you could do with it. I think Elliot told me, because I asked him about it, because he helped me figure out actually where to go get it transferred. And he confirmed that it was the deleted song. So I did talk to Elliot about it. I was, you know, and he said that when it got deleted, they all got together and were like, oh, what does everybody have? And they were like, somebody had the rough mix and somebody had this and somebody had that. And they put together all they had of it to try to see if they could salvage something before they tried to redo it. And since it was a Steely Dan song, they did have a rough mix of the track, but they couldn't get it and do whatever they needed to do in their Steely Dan way. And so it wasn't going to make it the cut. They weren't going to release something subpar. I mean, it just wasn't what they were doing back then.
Especially follow up of Aja, you know, coming off of that record, the pressure must have been incredibly high. So you found the cassette, but you then found additional copies. Is that right? There was a copy on DAT as well.
Hey, before we get back into the cassette, actually, this would be a good segue to a couple of clips. I have a couple of audio clips, and full disclosure, I did not clean them up. They're from lectures from 20 years ago, but I have my dad telling a few stories about the feats that they would take to get you all those amazing sounding records. And why my dad got into the recording industry in the first place.
Excellent. I will insert those here.
When we did records back in the Steely Dan, this is the last thing I'll talk about. When we were doing vinyl records, we would cut the vinyl, the shellac master. Then we would pack it in styrofoam, put it in a little thing of dry ice. I had a Pantera back then. And so I threw it in the trunk of my Pantera, and I would drive from LA up to Santa Maria, and I'm not going to tell you how fast, and then go straight to the plating plant, right? So it took me an hour and 45 minutes. So make the masters, hour and 45 minutes to Santa Maria. They'd be waiting for me, show up at the plant, we'd take the thing out, they'd put it in the baths. Because what happens is the shellac oil starts, there's oil in the shellac, and the oil starts to ooze out a little bit. And as the oil is oozing out into the groove, is basically bleeding, the shape of the groove changes. So the sound changes from the time it's cut till the time it gets to the plating plant. So then I would go check into a motel. They'd do the mothers and the stampers and everything, and then they'd press some records. And then I'd go over there and listen to them and okay them and go, oh, there's some noise here. And they'd clean up the stamper and make some more. And, yeah, okay, this is fine. And I'd okay them. And then I'd wait around. They'd press up 50, brand new, first ones off the press, shrink wrap them, and I'd take them back, and Donald Walter and I would split them up. So that was this is what we okayed.
That's phenomenal.
Could you imagine? You might have one of those. You might have one of those.
Oh, no, that's a test pressing. You might have one of those. I don't know. Have you found any records in your dad's stuff?
I have not, unfortunately, found a lot of vinyl records in my dad's stuff. So, I don't know.
He wasn't too keen. But is your microphone, did you switch it back?
I switched it back, but I want to play you the other.
Okay. All right.
So, this is the other clip of why Dad got into the recording industry. It's only 40 seconds.
Listening to records, I loved the music. And I loved listening to all the little nuances in the music. But what I always hated were the clicks and pops and the surface noise on records. And I went, how can I get past this? So I just spent years and years thinking about this. And then when I was in high school, I built a tape recorder out of spare parts from old tape recorders and everything. I'd put all these things together because I didn't have the money to buy them, and got something working, and I would go record things. I had friends who had a band, and I had gathered up three microphones, and I'd go and try to record the band, and everything sounded horrible, but there weren't any clicks and pops. So I'm going, I'm kind of digging this.
Did he listen to many records at home? But you said he didn't find many records in his possession, so was he kind of a tape guy?
I have a few boxes of records that my dad had kept over the years. I don't remember seeing a lot of Steely Dan records. So I'm not sure. I mean, you know, that was my parents moved a lot and my dad kept a lot, but I'm not sure what happened to that stuff from the 70s. I mean,
Okay.
I don't know. I'll have to go look.
So, you found the cassette, and then I heard at some point there was a DAT version that was found of the second arrangement. Is that right?
Yes. So that I did not share about because I learned my lesson with the first one.
Okay.
No, I had known that there was a DAT, and this is a lesson in never assume. And I could feel my dad telling me this, like, never assume, always do your due diligence. So I'm now we're in the beginning of 2023. I've been going through a divorce. I have to go back to LA to pack my stuff. And I'm talking with a family friend about the second arrangement tape, what to do with it again. I'm just, you know, I can't stop thinking about it either. So I said to him, I said, you know, he kept saying that he remembers my dad playing him something with horns. I have never heard anything with horns. I don't know, y'all. There's a whole horn debate that I'm not really sure about. And I said, you know, there is a dat that I've seen in my tubs that said second arrangement on it, but I always just assumed it was a backup copy of the cassette because in my travels of archiving my dad's stuff and knowing who my father was, he had three copies of everything. He backed up everything to three different formats, and those three formats had three copies, and like he was always backing everything up. So I had just assumed that it was a copy of the cassette. Never assume. Mm-hmm. Never assume. And my family friend said, well, you should get that transferred. And I'm packing my stuff, getting ready to move out of LA, put my stuff in storage again. And I'm like, all right, before this stuff goes into the ether of storage units again, let me dig out the DAT. So I'm digging around in my dad's tubs again, like I've done over the past decade. I'll just go through spurts of, it's like a dig. I'm like digging around. And then I'm digging around. He does have a lot of DATs. So I found the second arrangement DAT. I went and got it transferred with the same person who helped me transfer the cassette tape. And it sounded not as clear as the cassette tape, but it was the whole song. So then it was another mystery. And I was like, oh my God, I give up. I was like, I don't know. I was like, I can't. So when I reached out to Jake at Expanding Dan to help me share the story, and I said, look, I also found a DAT. We should share this audio too and let everybody hear it and they can figure it out, help me figure it out, help us figure it out. He's like, great. So what it sounds like is, you know, Elliot Shiner said that he had a rough mix on some two-track that they tried to salvage the second arrangement from. So I'm kind of guessing maybe it's a copy of that somehow. Like maybe it was a copy of that because DATs weren't released until the late 80s. So this is something okay. My dad made after the incident. And so I'm wondering if there was some tape or something my dad had in his possession for some time that he moved forward into DAT. Because my dad was also really good at moving all the formats forward to the next digital thing. Like every cassette would make its way to, well, actually, never mind. He threw away cassettes. Every whatever made it to DAT, made it to CD, made it to. I have every format. I have the history of digital media in my garage. I have everything that was probably ever released from the beginning of digital media to now, right?
So both versions are now kind of out there. Yeah. It sounds like the cassette is as close to the final version as possible without the horns. Does the cassette have the horns on it?
No. So I'm confused about the horns. And also, there's a few points in which Donald's vocal is not up. At first, I thought maybe it was muted and then my dad unmuted it, but it's missing in a couple places. So maybe they were going to punch that in, or it was a work tape. So it was like a work in progress, but it was as close to the finished copy as we were going to get in theory.
Right.
Like, I don't know.
So, We've heard it on YouTube. Do you think there'll ever be an official release on it? Do you think there will be the stamp of Steely Dan and an actual product of it at some point?
We'll be back after these messages.
There's no doubt about it. Record collecting has become a serious hobby and even an investment for many around the world. So record collectors have to ask themselves how best to protect their prized records and confidently buy and sell with others. There is an option to consider. Vintage media grading at vmgvinyl.com. vmgvinyl.com will professionally grade your record and encase it in protective plastic, so your record will retain its value for decades to come. This is the same approach that comic book and sports card collectors have done for years. Now, I know many record collectors will be horrified with the thought of having their records graded and encased in plastic. And for the majority of records, this isn't necessary. But if you have top dollar records that you need to protect, maybe a super rare album that's languishing on the shelf, a one-off misprint, or a special LP that you want to protect, look up VMGvinyl.com, Vintage Media Grading, and see if this service is right for you. That's Vintage Media Grading, VMGvinyl.com.
Hey everyone, I'm here to talk to you about Seems Easy record sleeve repair strips. Ever find a record in a used bin where the vinyl is gorgeous, but the sleeve has this ugly split and is even falling completely apart? Well, that's okay, grab it anyway, because with Seems Easy record sleeve repair strips, you can fix that right up. Seems Easy record repair strips repair seam splits from the inside, so it doesn't affect the appearance of a record sleeve, but it does make it functional again. With Seems Easy, records can now slide in and out like new. Turn a $5 record into a $25 functioning collectible. Just ask your local record shop for Seems Easy strips, and if they're not in stock, go to seamseasy.com. That's Seems Easy with two Z's. Seems Easy record sleeve repair strips. Seems easy because it is. Oh, and hey, record nerds, don't forget to clean your records with the very best and safest record cleaner, the Groove Washer. Make your records look and sound their very best and store them with confidence using the new Groove Washer Groove Guard record sleeves. You gotta try this out. It makes a huge difference to the quality of your vinyl experience. Ask for the Groove Washer by name at your local record store and accept no substitutes. Or head over to groovewasher.com and use discount code VINYLGUIDE. 10.
All hail the Groove Washer.
That's groovewasher.com, discount code VINYLGUIDE10.
Now we return to the program, already in progress.
No limits. So, we've heard it on YouTube. Do you think there'll ever be an official release on it? Do you think there will be the stamp of Steely Dan and an actual product of it at some point?
In my opinion, I'm not speaking for Donald. I'm not speaking for Walter's estate. I'm not speaking for my dad. In my opinion, I think that ship has unfortunately sailed. We've lost my dad. We've lost Walter. And I think what we have is maybe just what we get. I don't think Donald will ever re-record it. You can't really ever do it. I think maybe the best hope we have is that he'll play it live. Like, maybe we've been loud enough splashing in the ether for him to hear us that they'll play it live.
he's got to know. In fact, Steely Dan did play it live in 2010, didn't they? That was the first time. Yeah.
Is the first and only time they've played it live.
Right.
Yeah. So what a win if we get him to play it live again.
He's got to know. Steely Dan is trending on all social medias. People, there's this hype. I'm sure Spotify, you know, streams have skyrocketed, and someone is in Donald's ear going like, you know what's happening here. And
he's right, like, yeah, this kid, Roger's kid, did some meddling. She was meddling.
I knew she was trouble when she was seven. But yeah, look, it's a very sweet tale, and I'm sure, you know, he can see the that it only adds the shine to the legend of Steely Dan. I hope this isn't the end of this song. It's on YouTube now for people to enjoy. Mm-hmm. I think that there's probably something else that can be done with it. Maybe a record store day release. Maybe something that would then, you know, help elevate this to the song it should have been in 1980.
I can hope too.
I wanted to ask you about one other thing. I heard a story about Ricky Don't Lose That Number, the master tape of that. There was an issue with the master tape. The story goes, there was an issue with the master tape. There was some noise on it. Your father found, on inspecting the master tape, that a workman or someone who had been around that tape had dropped a glob of mustard on it. And your father found that glob and somehow rescued that master tape. Are you familiar with that story at all?
Yes, and it's funny. I just pulled that clip. I pulled that clip to share with the Gaucho Amigos podcast, and I would love to share it with you because you literally just asked about it. That's hilarious.
Yeah.
So yeah, there that you there is a glob of mustard story. And I have it. Okay. So this is actually from Gary Katz. So I have Gary Katz, the producer of Steely Dan, talking about this because we interviewed him about my dad about a decade ago.
Mm-hmm.
And for hopes to make a documentary. And he was talking about all the amazing things that my dad did. And this is one of those stories.
He was just so confident, even though he hadn't done a lot of what we were doing. He just walked into the room and we knew that we were okay. Roger was there. Nothing really bad could happen. I mean, it was just that sort of, he came to the room with that. And bad things happened and he fixed all things. So it was a lot of confidence for us. I mean, things happened on that first record that to this day, I think only Roger could have resolved. For instance, we have a song called The Boston Rag. In the middle of recording, I think it was Roger, could have been Donald, they were eating a Frank. And a piece of mustard fell on the tape. A teeny tiny piece of mustard. But it was right on the track where the guitar solo was. We were finished. So that when you played the track, you would hear in one beat of the solo. Well, we couldn't have that. And we thought we would have to re-record. Which Skunk wasn't thrilled about. And Roger said, just leave me go out of the room, leave me alone. And 2 hours later, he took a razor blade and cut the smallest piece of tape out that you've ever seen that you could never hear. Except I can still hear it a little. But it was remarkable what he did. Really, just remarkable. And the people I worked with were not easily impressed by anything.
Well, I guess the lesson of the story is don't eat around the 2-inch recorder.
Yes, yes, yes. Don't eat hot dogs over the tape. That's the moral of the story.
One other interesting thing, and I didn't realize until kind of doing a bit more research for this conversation, your father was high school chums with Frank Zappa. And apparently they would record together occasionally. What sort of stories did you hear about this time in your dad's life?
Yeah, I listened to an interview of his the other day, and he was talking about that. And he was neighbors. They were neighbors in
Cucamonga.
In Cucamonga, yeah. And my granny and his mom are friends. And so he would come over after school and they would mess around and record guitars and bounce it back and forth. And yeah, that's all I've heard. I asked him where those tapes were. I was like, so where are those? And he said that someone threw it away. He said his ex-wife threw it away, which is rude because he might've just lost them, but he said,
he wanted to close that door, I guess.
Yeah.
Because Frank had a studio down, I think, in Upland called Studio Z. And it's part of the Frank Zappa legend, and that got raided by the police and things like that. So I was interested to see if your father was around at that point or involved in any of those recordings.
Look, my dad wasn't around there, but it was the Wild West of recording back in that day. The stories I have heard, which are so much fun to hear these guys talk about the stories from back in the day. They're wild. My dad wasn't at, I think that's kind of where their story ended, is they had fun bouncing stuff back and forth in high school. And then my dad went off, you know, to study nuclear engineering, and he opened a recording studio in Torrance called Quantum with a couple of guys. They turned like a, you know, 4-car garage into a studio kind of thing. And then my dad got hired at ABC Dunhill and was working as a nuclear engineer. And he was working nights at the recording studio. And he balanced that for a while, I think, until he really got into his own with Steely Dan. And then he took off and left nuclear engineering behind to pursue his passion in music. And yeah. I think that it's really interesting, though, you know, when you have these guys like my dad and Tom Dowd, you know, that he was on the Manhattan Project or something. He was also a nuclear physicist. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you have these guys with like these science brains just in the studio. And it's like this perfect blend of science and art where they could see sound. It's like they could also understand the physics of sound. So when you talk about those instruments sounding so clear and them being perfectly placed, it's like my dad could almost visualize the frequencies and where those waves were coming from and how fast they came. And he was actually really good at mic placement. There's this other story I've heard since I've been listening to a lot of his interviews lately where he said sometimes it's not even about the mic. It's about where you place it. Like in my instance, putting it too close to my mouth is not the best idea. Like I could have the best mic in the world, but if I'm not using it right, like it's not going to sound good. Mm-hmm. So my dad, he would just get a mic out of the garbage, and it was about finding that sweet spot, taking the time to find that sweet spot to get the best sound you could from the instrument. And I am just so blown away at the amount of time and care it takes for us to be able to hear what the artists are trying to deliver to us. Like the amount of stuff that goes in between that is so like amazing, and the amount of things that could go wrong in the process. I thought one day, I said, what are we actually listening to that is what we were intended to hear? Like, who knows? Mm-hmm. Like,
yeah.
You heard the dry eye story. I mean, like, not everybody was driving acetate or whatever in dry eyes not everybody was taking that type of effort to make sure that the consumer could get the best version of what they meant them to get.
Oh, 100%. Those sort of details. I mean, again, the dry ice to keep those oils from seeping in record pressing, that lacquer process is well known that you want to lacquer as close to plating as possible. So you don't lose that detail. And the fact that they used the dry ice and he sped in a Pantera, whatever he was driving to go make it happen, illustrates perfect example of how you look across every single detail. Another story I heard was for the Nightfly, which is arguably the world's first digital recording, right? Full digital recording. Your dad, as I understand, made sure that all pressing houses had a tape or a copy of the digital master for their pressings. So he avoided the generational loss. So every copy of the Nightfly that was created was as close to the source as possible. Are you familiar with that? Or is that I'm sure that doesn't surprise you if you're not.
That's such a dad thing. And you know what? I have a perfect clip of him talking about that and why he made sure that he did that.
The very first album that I did that was all digital, the Donald Fagen Nightfly album, the record company used the wrong tape to make the CDs. They used the digital tape to make the vinyl records, and they used an analog copy of that to make the CDs with. And I know that Phil's run into exactly the same thing with some of his albums. And most recently, one of the record companies, I won't mention names, but their initials I think are MCA, changed pressing plants for CDs. So they needed to send some new CD masters of the old Steely Dan records. And somebody called me up to compare two different manufacturers of CDs, the gold ones versus the stock ones in the store. And he said, well, you know, they sound exactly the same. And I listened to him and I said, well, gee, there's even pitch differences between these two CDs. How could that happen? It turned out that the old CDs that I had were from the original issue where we handed them the master and said, this is the master, make the CDs from those. When they changed pressing plants, they just went into the vaults and ran across the first tape, which happened to be an EQ'd copy of the original analog that had been sitting in storage for 12 years. And they used that, and the machine was playing back at the wrong speed even, so the pitch of the whole album was wrong. And things like that are still happening, where they're not... not the right people that are going in to get these priceless masters that you spent years and years and lots of money making. And then, you know, once it's in the vault, I guess it doesn't matter what it is.
This has been great. I love chatting about my dad. I love chatting about that era of the record industry. So I just really appreciate you and everyone that's been so excited with all the stuff I've had to share. It really keeps me motivated to keep sharing, and it really does make the decade of work that my mom, my sister and I and others, you know, that have helped us along the way worth it. Like it feels really gratifying to have put the energy and the effort into saving all this stuff and people really appreciating it. Like, that's so special. So thank you.
Thank you for continuing to unearth these stories and these recordings. And, you know, you're very excited about it, which is very clear. And it's a very honest reaction and a girl getting to know her father from a different angle. Again, we really thank you for your perseverance and looking through the tapes. The second arrangement coming to light is just this wonderful miracle. And again, I hope that's not the end of the treasures you uncover. But Simsy, thank you so much for coming on, and you're welcome back anytime. If you have any other finds or anything of interest, you know, reach out, and happy to help in any way we can.
Great. Thank you so much.
Oh, she's absolutely delightful. Thank you so much, Simsy, for coming on The Vinyl Guide. Again, link to that version of the second arrangement is here in this episode page at thevinylguide.com. And don't forget, there's an extended version of this interview, an extra 20 minutes or so, and we get into it with lots more stories and details on Wendell, the digital audio workstation that Roger created. And that's for people who support the show at patreon.com/vinylguide. $5 or $10 a month, whatever you could spare, is much appreciated. It helps keep us going, keeps me in burritos, and keeps me pumping out these episodes. So please join us at patreon.com/vinylguide and enjoy all the extra stories and content up there. And that's it for this episode of The Vinyl Guide. Thank you so much for tuning in. Please share these episodes on your social media. Put them out on Facebook. Share them out on Threads. Tweet them out on Twitter. Even do a little TikTok dance if you're in the mood. And we'll be back shortly with a brand new episode. So until we talk next time, get out there and buy some records, people. Cheers.
That's it for this episode of The Vinyl Guide. Send your thoughts to Nate@thevinylguide.com or follow or tag us on Instagram @vinylguide. Until next time, keep spinning.